Hello and welcome to the Comic Book Noise look at Countdown to Final Crisis. I'm your host, Derek Howard. My co-host, Mike Myers, is unavailable, so gonna just dive right into it. Let's start with issue number 9. Now, issue number 9, on the cover it says Revolution, but as we know from previous issues, the cover has nothing to do with the title, which is Pay the Piper. The head writer is Paul Dini with Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti. Story consultant is Keith Giffen. The pencils are by Tom Derenick. The inks are by Wayne Foucher. The color is by Pete Pantanzis. The letters are by Ken Lopez. The cover is by Stefan Roux with Corinne Bacafuso. Once again, I love this cover. I like this this Roux guy. The assistant editor is Elizabeth V. Gerline, and the editor is Mike Carlin. Now, the story starts off inside of Brother Eye Apocalypse, basically. Desaad tells the Piper to play his flute when all of a sudden they're approached by the OMAC who had taken over Una, the single triplicate girl slash dual damsel. Desaad reveals that he Desaad reveals that he discovered Piper was a rare human vessel for the anti-life equation. And he was pretty much manipulating events that were designed to grind Piper down both mentally and physically so that, you know, Desaad could get the anti-life back on Apocalypse. He's up there yelling at OMAC saying, I broke him of his will. I led him with one purpose in mind. And the Una OMAC just says, dialogue is irrelevant. Your plans are irrelevant. And then she ends up just blasting him. Says, mute subject. Thought that was funny. The scene then switches to Solomon and Darkseid. And they're talking over a chessboard like they like to do. Blah, 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 blah. So then the scene switches to Jason Todd, who's following the Una OMAC back to Brother Eye because he knows that he could get off this planet, you know. I thought it was kind of funny that he's not rushing into things like you would think Jason Todd would do. He's staying back because he says, having been dead once already, I'm not interested in taking another dirt nap. He said, I'm getting off this rock, and apparently I'm doing it alone. Oh, well, you had a choice, Donna. You didn't pick the survivor. Of course, she didn't pick the survivor. She picked that knucklehead, Kyle Rayner. He's just such an idiot. He's such an idiot. Anyway, Holly, Harley, Mary, and the rest of the challengers go looking for Jason Todd because, as Donna puts it, he is a jerk, but he's one of us, Kyle, and we can't abandon him. Okay, besides, if Red Robin stumbles on something useful, we might as well all benefit. And the way she's giving him a look, that's not the Donna Troy that I'm kind of used to, you know? It's kind of like the other Donna Troy, but oh well. The evil Donna Troy, who was under the spell of Belthera, or was working with Belthera, who knows, who cares? Anyway, they end up being followed by Desaad, who wants to kill all of them and Piper and take the anti-life for himself. So then we switch over to Una OMAC, who takes Piper and Karate Kid to Brother Eye's inner chamber. And Brother Eye discovers the Mordekaiser virus, which is not good. He gets ready to dissect Karate Kid, you know, when for some reason Jason Todd triggers an alarm, and it had to be on purpose, okay? Because I don't know, Jason's just not that dumb, is he? He sees Firestorm and the Atomic Knights all hooked up and just powering Brother Eye, basically. when like I said, when he triggers the alarm, and Una Omak attacks, and he basically tricks it into freeing Firestorm. But before Firestorm can actually help and do something, Jason gets blasted. The other heroes then arrive, you know, afterwards, and get attacked by Una Omak. And while they're fighting, Ray Palmer, the Atom, stops the dissection of Karate Kid. I don't know. Anyway, and then he finds out that Karate Kid is a carrier of the Mordekaiser virus. I don't know why I blanked on that. Anyway, Brother Eye teleports the heroes out of his core and into a situation where they are surrounded by Omaks. Not the Una Omak type, but the other Omak types. And while they get teleported away, Piper tries to, you know, escape, but Desaad keeps telling him to play, you know, play your music. So Piper picks up his pipe, plays, and explodes Desaad's head, you know, Scanners style. If you've ever seen Scanners, you know what I mean. Not the fake Scanners 2, 3, 4 and rest of them, just the one. And you don't even really need to watch all of Scanners. Just watch that last like 5 minutes. It's worth it, especially for that time. Anyway, he scanners him. And then Piper turns to face he exploded his head as payback for a Trickster. Because, let's face it, Trickster was his best friend. And for some reason, best friends of Piper usually end up dead. You know, because for a while, wasn't Wally West dead or believed to be dead. Or who cares? Anyway, Piper turns to face Brother Eye. And then he plays, I'm assuming it's Freebird. You know, I know the music for Freebird, but I've never been drunk enough to understand the lyrics. Outside, the dawn is breaking, but inside, I'm aching to be free. I don't know. Who cares? Anyway, Brother Eye is driven from Apocalypse. There's a big explosion, and Piper is at ground zero. So is he dead? Is he not? Who knows? Because the scene then switches to all the heroes that are falling apart. Una is back to being her regular self. And Donna is trying to, you know, rally the troops and wake up Kyle, because guess what? We need the shield. Blah, 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 blah. We need the ring to shield us because we've got company. And she's looking worried. And now, remember, this is a woman who stared into a nuclear explosion and didn't blink. She didn't really even look nervous, you know. She's just like, ah, damn it. And now she's looking scared. I wonder who it could be. Backup stories: The Origin of Black Manta. The writer is Scott Beatty. The penciler is Mike Norton. The inker is Rodney Ramos. The letterer is Ken Lopez. The colorist is Hi-Fi. And the editor is Elizabeth V. Gerline. I like it. I like it a lot. I really like the artwork. I wish that Mike Norton would do an Iron Man book. An Iron Man, jeez. Aquaman book. See, those are two characters I like. I like Iron Man, I like Aquaman, and they don't get enough respect, if you ask me. Anyway, that issue was issue number 9. Wasn't great, wasn't totally awful. Just like a lot of the issues for Countdown. It was just there, you know. And another one that is here is number 8 on the cover. It says War in Pieces. So, of course, the inside is Homeward Bound. The head writer is Paul Dini with Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti. The story consultant is Keith Giffen. The pencils are by Carlos Magno, whose work I disliked when I first saw it, but it grew on me. The inks are by Rodney Ramos. The color is by Tom Chu. The letters are by Travis Lanham. The cover is by Scott Collins. The assistant editor is by Elizabeth V. Gerline, and the editor is Mike Carlin. The story starts with Adam being mopey. Oh, I failed. Oh, I've lost everything. And go away. Switch to Solomon and Darkseid standing over a chessboard. Again, talking. And this is like a really bad picture. This is like a full page spread. This is a really, really bad picture of Darkseid. I don't know why it looks like his eyebrow is halfway up the side of his head. A horrible, horrible picture. Horrible, horrible. A bull full of whores. Anyway, it's revealed that it was Solomon who ruptured Captain Adam's skin, which started him down the road to become Monarch. Okay? And I guess this goes back to Battle of Bloodhaven. This is a couple of years ago. So, anyway. Adam then discovers that Darkseid wants the Mordekaiser virus to destroy the superhumans and the new gods so that he can remake reality. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't the Anti-Monitor want to go back to the beginning of time to remake reality? And in Zero Hour, didn't Monarch want to remake reality? And I want to say at one time, Parallax, Hal Jordan, wanted to remake reality. And, Alexander Luthor wanted to remake reality. Mr. Mind in 52 actually did remake reality. And now Darkseid wants to remake reality. So I'm wondering if the big bad, whoever it is, in Final Crisis will want to remake reality. Really, DC, you've gone back to that well a little too much. All right. Before Adam can really hear a whole lot, he gets drawn back to Apocalypse, where the Challengers, Jimmy Olsen, the Harrys, and Firestorm have all met up. You remember last issue, like what, 4 or 5 minutes ago, where I told you how Donna Troy was looking all worried because they've got company? Well, the company of other friends. I guess she wanted Kyle to wake up so that he could put on his best suit. Who knows? I don't know. She was worried for nothing. Anyway, Adam tells them that he might have to kill Karate Kid because of the disease he carries. But they're just like, no, we got to find a cure. We got to go home. And Adam is like, no. He goes to Earth and everyone dies. You know, that's what I've been trying to prevent. It could even spread from universe to universe. Jason says the smart thing. He said, let me put the kid down. You know, if you got a rabid dog around biting people, you don't say, oh, no, he's just misunderstood. No, we can cure him. No, you take him out. Anyway, everybody's like, oh, no, let's go home and figure out a way. And Jimmy's like, I'm not going anywhere. I have to confront Darkseid. And everybody's, and Donna's like, you know, this is madness. Killing Karate Kid, confronting Darkseid. This place is corrupting you. You know, it's like, it's Apocalypse. What do you expect from Apocalypse? She's definitely been hanging around Kyle too long. Anyway, switch back to Darkseid, who's just been talking and talking and talking. And then he finally realizes that Solomon has disappeared. Oh, I think it's funny. However, he says something very interesting. He says, make your final move, Monitor. Then he realizes he's alone. He goes, gone. Good. I grow weary of waiting on the inevitable. And then he says, like a frightened dog, you react to the voice of your master, completely unaware that no one and nothing can save you now. Now, is he saying that because he is really gruff that Solomon is acting like, you know, a dog who's afraid? Or is there somebody else pulling Solomon's strings? You know, I like Carlos Magno's artwork. It's grown on me, but he should not draw Darkseid. Oh, my goodness. He should not draw Darkseid. Anyway, the scene switches back to the heroes where they're talking and blabbing. There's this one line where, there's this one part where Donna Troy and Jimmy Olsen are arguing back and forth. And Harley Quinn says, wouldn't it be funny if they just grabbed each other and started making out? I thought, I don't know. I guess I thought that was funny. And apparently Grant Palmiotti thought it was funny because they put it in there. Heroes turn around and look up. And there's Solomon. And they're right, you know, they're ready to fight. Okay. he reveals that Darkseid is the one who gave Jimmy Olsen his powers. He says Jimmy is a vessel that Darkseid hides the powers of the dead new gods until he wanted to retrieve him. And the only way he can retrieve him is by killing him. Okay. It's it's like that makes no sense. And he goes, think, dolt. Now, when somebody calls you adult, they mean it. I mean, adult is not a word you just toss around lightly. He says, you're Superman's pal. What greater insurance policy against other scheming gods' interference? Anyway, Solomon said that he can't allow Jimmy to, Jimmy and the others to fall into Darkseid's hands, so he teleports them all back to Earth, you know, which is one thing that, Adam didn't want, because in fact, I love it when everybody appears right in the middle of, I guess, Times Square, because everybody appears in the middle of Times Square, or I don't know, someplace. He goes, ah, no, that bastard. I like that. I thought that was funny. So everybody's at home. And then finally, you know, we've got to warn people about Darkseid. And I love it. You know, he's a dumbass Kyle is up to like, I think we need to warn everybody about Darkseid. And Jason's just like, and we might want to get out of the middle of the street, too. Like it. Like this character. Una's like, I just want to save my friend. Why won't you help me? She's talking to Adam, and he's just like, because we just brought the most lethal alien virus imaginable to our world. For all we know, we're already infected. So we need to decide right here, right now, if Karate Kid lives or dies. You know, Adam grew up here. The backup story is the unsecret origin of Bizarro. And I'm not a Bizarro fan, so I refuse to even acknowledge that section of the book. DC Nation, which I am not going to talk about other than to say that it is a tribute from Dan DiDio to Steve Gerber, who lived from 1947 to 2008. Yeah. Steve Gerber was actually one of those guys who, when you talked about best writers from the 70s, his name always came up, even though a lot of people can't think of a single thing he wrote outside of, once you get past Howard the Duck and The Defenders, then people really have to start scratching their heads, you know. Okay. Issue number 7. Countdown to Final Crisis. When I first read, when I first started reading, you know, the first time I read through these issues, I didn't have number 7. For some reason, my comic book guy didn't order it for me. He says he did, but I didn't get it. So he got it for me a couple of weeks later. So I had skipped this issue thinking, nothing big happened. You know, they're landing and trying to figure out when they're going to kill Karate Kid. And I already know they're not going to kill Karate Kid. So I go on to the next issue, which is entitled The Great Disaster is Upon Us. But we'll get to that in a minute. I want to bring this up because I want you to realize everything that happens in this issue, I did not know about. Okay. So try to think of the next. Just try to think of all the, just listen to all the details that I'm missing that I had absolutely no clue about. Okay. In fact, one very big one. Okay. The cover says challenging the Justice League. And it has the big three, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, taking on the challengers of the beyond. And they're not faring too well. That's all I'm going to say about that. So the title of the story is actually Gone Tomorrow. Paul Dini, head writer with Adam Beechin. Keith Giffen is a story consultant. Tom Derenick is pencils. Wayne Foucher inks. Pete Pantanzas colors. Travis Lanham letters. Scott Collins cover. Elizabeth V. Gerline assistant editor. And Mike Carlin editor. All right. Holly and Harley leave the others to return to Gotham. Okay. Although, you know, I could have sworn that Holly was wanted for murder back in Gotham, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people know who Harley Quinn is in Gotham, all right? But they're going back to Gotham. And unfortunately, for some reason, they don't explain why, but the powers that the Greek gods have given them, they no longer have. I don't know why. I thought I may have missed another issue, but apparently it's just something that they decided to get rid of and not explain. Donna, Ray, Kyle, Mary, and Una take a Karate Kid to the Hall of Justice, where Ray Palmer finds his access codes don't work. And what does he say? He says, I was gone for a while. They must have changed the access codes. And Superman is right there. Superman says, we never change the access code. No one's been stupid enough to try to break into the hall yet. He says, who are you and what do you want? He goes, hell, it ain't been that long. He says, Superman, it's me, Ray. And the guy goes, only Ray I know is Ray Terrell. And you are not. Wait a minute. Is that young man? Is he hurt? Talking about Karate Kid. He doesn't recognize him. He doesn't recognize Karate Kid. Doesn't recognize Adam. All of a sudden, Green Lantern Hal Jordan arrives with Flash. Not sure which Flash this is, because Kyle says, Hal, thank God. He's like, who the hell are you and how do you know my name? That's how you react when you don't know somebody, Superman. You say, who the hell are you? Whatever, I'm walking down the street and somebody looks at me and they nod. I go, who the hell are you? You think I'm joking. I actually did that when I was living temporarily in Atlanta. Ugh. It was a hot day. I was in a suit and dress shoes. I had gone on a terrifically, horribly bad job interview. And I missed my bus. So I decided to walk home. I was like, I can't be that far, right? It had to be at least 10 miles in dress shoes on a hot summer day. And I'm walking and the sky is coming the opposite way. And he looks at me, you know, Southerners are just really, really friendly people. And he looks at me and he's and I says, "Hey, how you doing?" I was like, "What the hell do you care?" And you know, and he looks at me like, "Oh, okay, he's from up north," and kept walking. I was just thinking to myself, that was an asshole move. Anyway, now that I've made an ass of myself and let everyone know, Firestorm shows up and everybody, you know, everybody teleports away. I forgot who teleported him though. I don't know. But they never said who this Flash is. I don't know if it's Barry Allen or if it's Wally West or Barda. I don't know who it is. But they don't recognize Firestorm. And Firestorm, like, blinds everybody, even Superman. And while they're being blinded, you know, while the Justice League is being blinded, the rest of them vanish. Superman realizes something's up. He's like, "Look, I don't like the feel of this. Call the rest of the team," right? Superman looks mad. You know, like a real mad Superman. Next page, it reveals that they didn't just vanish. When Firestorm blasted a big light ray, what did he say? He says, Adam says, "I was able to shrink and hit some buttons on the JLA teleport system." Okay, don't know why him hitting buttons would work when his access code didn't. I guess I don't know anything about coherent storytelling. Firestorm says that he went home and found out that he doesn't exist. Okay, they're not on the Earth that they are on. They're not on their Earth. Okay, remember, I was under the impression last time that they were home. They were on their Earth. Okay, and I was wrong. They were not. Okay? And while they're trying to figure out what's going on and what to do, you know, Una's just had enough. She said, "No more talking, no more plans. Val's dying. We've been carrying him around for 4 issues like luggage, and he's dying. Sooner or later, one of the writers is going to realize this." Well, I'm paraphrasing, but something like that. Anyway, she goes and she's beating Adam on this on the chest, right? Like, you know, we were supposed to save him. Even though Adam was, like, the furthest away from her, she walked past everybody, starts beating him on the chest and starts crying. And Mary's looking like, "Oh, wow, this is really affecting her." And Kyle, like most men would, is just looking all uncomfortable, like, she's crying. What am I supposed to do? She can't see my eyes because I have this mask on. But let me just rub the back of my neck and look away. Oh, yeah. And Donna's like, check that out. And then Adam's just like, "We're doing our best. Please believe it. But the whole world's in danger because of the virus he's carrying." Yeah, just rub that in a little bit more. So he's saying, "Look, we need to find a facility where I can work so I can synthesize inoculations from my blood, you know, and or else, you know, there's very little hope for us." And so Kyle, not understanding a damn thing that's just been said, "Well, any reason I couldn't use my ring to whip up whatever you need?" And he says, "I wish, Kyle. Promise, I don't know what I need." At no point did he stand there and say, "Oh, you know what? I really wish I had. Oh, shit. No, I'm about to make a fool of myself. I'm going to start sounding like I'm a writer for Star Trek. I start making up scientific junk. You know, I really kind of wish I had a bunch of test tubes and beakers or whatever." He didn't say stuff, but Kyle decided, "Can I make something?" "Yeah, Kyle, why don't you make the inoculation with your willpower ring? And as soon as you fall asleep, everybody gets it and dies. Idiot." And so, what's his name? Firestorm's like, "Well, what about Project Cadmus? Can we just go there?" You know, I'm pretty sure they've got it. And I love it. He's, that's the place that, Kyle, get everyone together. We're going to need all the help we can get. Like mush. Mush, you big dumb dog. Do what I'm telling you to do. So, when they arrive at where Project Cadmus should be, Jimmy Olsen and the Harrys are hanging out. They've pitched tents. They've got a bonfire going, and they're standing around. And they're like, what are you guys doing here? It's just, there's no habitat for some reason. I guess they kind of figured it out. And then Jimmy Olsen says, hey, yeah, I guess I kind of figured this is where you guys will come. Okay. Now, everybody's there except Jason Todd. Okay. They get to the exact same spot. Now, they've been talking about how this is not their Earth. There's evidence that this is not their Earth. Hal Jordan looks right at Kyle and says that he doesn't know him. You know, everybody's like, you know, this is not our Earth. Firestorm's like, you know, I went home and I don't exist. This is not our Earth. Kyle comes back with Holly and Harley, and the very first thing he says is big problem, serious problem, wherever we are, it's definitely not our Earth. And Adam just says, how do you know? You know, he had this look on his face like, you dumb mutt. How do you know? He says, ask Harley. And Harley's just crying. Says, that wasn't my pudding in there. Now, you know our pudding is a joker, right? I hope so. You know, I don't know who I have less respect for after this series. Kyle Rayner or what's his name? Paul Dini. Is that that guy's name? Paul Dini. I've kind of blocked him out of my head. Yeah, Paul Dini. Anyway. Remember Adam told him to get everybody. That includes Jason. So he goes, Kyle, where's Jason? He was busy. And they show a flashback of Jason punching somebody. I guess the most powerful weapon in the universe really doesn't matter for crap if it's in the hands of a complete moron. Anyway, so they go into Cadmus and they are attacked by four-armed Kirby creations. I don't know what these things are, but it definitely looks like something that Jack Kirby created. It looks like one of those creations that he comes up with that anybody who tries to draw them afterwards just doesn't make them look right. You know, because these guys, I'm pretty sure that if Jack Kirby was drawing it, or even Eric Larson was drawing it, then it might look all right. But in the hands of Tom Derenek, it just looks like... Anyway, they fight these guys for pretty much no good reason. Because remember, they broke into these goofy balls' houses, right? And so the four-armed monsters, you know, they're going to fight back. So what happens? Jimmy Olsen decides to use a boom tube to teleport them somewhere. Don't know where. I mean, these are dumb creatures, but they have some sort of sentience because they know when they're being attacked. And he just teleported them somewhere. Now, remember way back in an earlier episode where Jimmy Olsen killed the guy. Okay? They didn't acknowledge him. And I'm the only one who brought it up. But, you know, he had to kill that guy. And now he's just, you know, wiping out all these Kirby creations. And he says, I got to confess, that's a real rush. Okay. And then out of the shadows comes Dublex. He's like, wait a minute, you know me and I don't know you. So he reads their minds. And before he could, you know, he starts to read his minds. Una says, hey, you know, my friend, he's sick, you know. And he's like, calm yourself. You know, he's got this look on his face like, calm yourself, woman. Just shut up. I'll read your mind. He says, Mortococcus. Interesting. And he looks over at Adam, and you contain the curative serum within you. And so she's like, well, what can you do? Can you save Val? I said, if it were my power, I would do so. But I'm afraid your friend is already dead. That's right. Karate Kid is dead after being hoisted around for, what, about four issues. Finally realize, hey, we need to hurry up and kill this guy, so we're going to move on with the story. Now remember, the fact that they're on another planet, the fact that Karate Kid is dead, the fact that Jason is not with them, all that stuff I had no idea about. Just wait till we get to number six. Because I'll tell you right now, issues six and five, to me, they're the two best issues of the whole series. Anyway, backup story for this issue. The origin of Bane. The writer is Scott Beatty. The artist is Graham Nolan. The letterer is Travis Lanham. The colorist, Hi-Fi. And the editor is Elizabeth V. Gerline. Origin of Bane, I already knew it, but he makes Bane look really cool. I like the artwork. Graham Nolan is one of those guys that some people like really, really, really dig his artwork, and other people are just kind of apathetic towards it. I kind of like it. I kind of like his artwork when he's doing Batman. I'm pretty sure he did like a Shadow. I want to say he did the Shadow, or he did like I want to say he did Doc Savage, but I'm pretty sure that that was not him. I think that was like Rod Wigham or something like that. But when he does Batman, it's good. Anything else? I don't know. He kind of loses. DC Nation has Cheryl Smith Owens, who's really cute. Issue number six. The cover says the great disaster is upon us. So, of course, the actual title is Outbreak. The creative team. Paul Dini, head writer with Adam Beechin. Keith Giffen is a story consultant. Mike Norton on pencils. Jimmy Paul Miotti on inks. Tom Chu on colors. Travis Lanham letters. Scott Collins cover. And I want to say I really, really, really dig this cover. Elizabeth V. Gerline is the assistant editor. Mike Carlin is the editor. All right. Now remember, I think that we're still on our Earth when all this stuff happens, all right? Now, Buddy Blank, who last we saw was someplace with his grandson, okay? Now, he's working in Cadmus Labs. He's keeping a diary of what happened right after Karate Kid's death. The Cadmus Project tried to create an antidote from Adam's blood, but the virus kept changing. So they decided to open up Karate Kid's corpse to get the virus out. However, there were already news reports about people acting like animals and animals that were changing physically to be more human-like. When they opened Karate Kid, the virus grew to a monstrous size. I mean, this thing was so big that it was bigger than human beings. They attacked the hero. It attacked the heroes, and man, did they fight them! You know, they fought them, and finally, the big, huge virus escaped into the non-sterile environment, but it exploded in the dust when it was captured by Kyle's ring. All right. And even though they got most of it, the virus was in the lungs of the bystanders. Okay. They had been breathing the same air as the, you know, as where the explosion was. Now, Buddy says, you know, I hoped I was worrying for nothing. After all, none of the integrity breach alerts have been sounded, and my badge's contamination sensor remained neutral. But the damn thing exploded right in front of us. He said, I hope the butterflies in my stomach were just that, butterflies. But I think part of me knew even then. Challengers went to Gotham City to basically retrieve Jason. All right. Jason didn't want to. All right. First off, they went to. Shit. How can I put this? Adam and Duplex went to study the particles. And then that's when they saw that the virus had changed state. It was an instant mutation. That's why they couldn't really do anything against it. But not only was it smart enough to mask its presence, but it also changed its method of transmission so that it was no longer like, you know, a blood virus. It was now airborne. And when it was out in the unsterile corridor for 20 seconds, maybe, that's all it took, the virus was loose. And the first outbreak took place in Gotham. And that's why the Challengers went there. And he says, well, actually not the Challengers, but just Green Lantern went there to go get Jason and just slugs him with a big old green hand. Jason didn't want to see these people. And they didn't want to see him. And Buddy Blank says, after 5 minutes with the kid, I could see why. I still don't know why people don't like Jason. Jason kind of, I like Jason, especially in this one. Now, a small number of the heroes were inoculated against the virus because they had synthesized enough of it from Adam's blood, but they decided to put it into the heroes whose powers could put out the big problems, you know. So they show Flash getting it, but I'm pretty sure that Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman probably also got them. Although, how would they give Superman a shot? Anyway, Buddy Blank is the one who figured out that the virus targets DNA, then scrambles it before it moves on to the next host. Says it's like a bee pollinating from flower to flower, only leaving behind an altered genetic code. And then that's when he realized that this thing was going from humans to other species. All right. He said that, you know, even before they did the autopsy on Karate Kid, even before they quarantined the body, they never stood a chance of containing it. He's the only one who realized that. A bunch of them were just sitting around arguing, because, you know, that's what heroes do when they can't find somebody to slug. They slug each other, right? And of course, they're going to slug one who's the biggest pain in the ass, who is Jason, right? Although I think it's really funny where they had the show. It was like Holly holding Harley Quinn back from fighting Jason. I thought that was kind of funny because I let him fight. You know? I really seriously doubt if Harley's going to do a whole lot of damage towards someone who learned to fight from Batman. You know. While all of that's going on and there's hell on earth and people are just going crazy, of course, the politicians are start talking about terrorism and weapons of mass destruction, and they've hit us, now we got to hit them back. So everything just started going crazy on the outside politically, and everything's going crazy on the inside, because you started to see women. There's one woman who started to change into the test animals that she had interacted with, and vice versa, because you saw a little mouse with opposable thumbs. Okay, that's not supposed to happen. And then all of a sudden, everything's going crazy. Nobody knows what to do. And Una told them why she figured out the reason for their inability to get the virus out of Karate Kid, because when it had assimilated Karate Kid's blood, well, the blood was from 1,000 years in the future. Okay, so there's 1,000 years of medicine and illness that it had already assimilated and gotten, gotten prepared for. She said that the virus was now a millennium ahead of us, able to cope with not just anything we could throw at it, but anything we'd conceive of in the next 10 centuries. The 31st century nanites in the virus allow the Mordococcus to mutate ahead of curative measures. The inoculations that they got from the Atom would only help a limited few, but the Mordococcus would mutate past it in days, hours. And when that found out, everybody left. All the regular trained scientists said, oh, screw this, I'm going home. The heroes started fighting because, like I said, that's what they do. And they showed this great scene of Mary Marvel just hauling off and knocking the hell out of Jason. Because, of course, when in doubt, punch Jason Todd. It's always been my motto. It's how I live my life. The Green Lantern, not Kyle, but the real Green Lantern, Jordan. He wanted to do something that everybody's trying to talk him out of it. And of course, he's Hal Jordan. You don't tell Hal Jordan anything. He tells you, and you like it. All right. Buddy Blank decided, you know what? If they don't know what to do, I'm getting out of here. He wanted to go see his daughter and his grandson if they were still alive. Remember, the grandson had no name? Well, kid still doesn't have a name, right? Even on this planet, he doesn't have a name. As he's sneaking out, Una saw him, and she said, look, I want to come along. Karate Kid's dead. I have nothing left here. And he's like, no. No. And then he's like, no, I got to help my family. And she said, well, if you don't take me, I'll just turn you in for desertion. He's like, oh, God damn it. All right, then, come on. And then the last thing that Buddy Blank saw was Hal Jordan flying off into space. He was going looking for Hal Jordan, our Green Lantern, heading into space to seek interstellar help, not realizing he was carrying a virus with him, the alien world spreading it all over the galaxy. Not only were we going down, we were taking everyone with us. The end of everything was nigh. Yeah, good job there, you Hal Jordan mass murderer. Now you're going to kill other people. On our Earth, he killed a bunch of Green Lanterns. And now he's going to kill everybody in this universe. Man's evil, I tell you. He's evil. But he's not a dummy. Not a dumb dog. Anyway, the backup story is The Origin of Felix Faust. The writer is Scott Beatty. The artist is Jesus Saiz. The colorist is Hi-Fi. The letterer is Travis Lanham. And the editor is Elizabeth V. Gerline. I didn't know anything about Felix Faust. Well, not anything, but I knew very little about him. I knew about Wrath, Gaskin, Ebenaga, but outside of that stuff and what's happened in 52 and in Countdown, I don't really know too much about the guy, But, yeah, no, I do. So remember, I didn't know that we were on another planet. Okay? I read 6. I did not know. I read 5. I did not know. All right? And speaking of 5, there is no title on the cover. All right? And the cover is just... it says Collins 07 after Kirby. There you see the Statue of Liberty falling to a lake of fire. The Amazon is ablaze. And in the river, what kind of river is the Statue of Liberty on? Is it an ocean? I don't know. I'm not going to New York. Too many pimps and chuds there. You see the dead. You see, in like the, you know, like the bloody river, there's the dead body of... Karate Kid. This is a really gruesome-ass cover, I gotta tell you. Anyway, the name of the story is End Times. The Paul Dini is the head writer with Adam Beechin. Keith Giffen is a story consultant, and the reason why this is one of my favorites. Now, that last issue set up everything so perfectly. Okay? Even though I did not know there was a different Earth, set things up so perfectly that in this issue, when they brought in Jim Starlin to do the pencils, I was like, oh, hell yeah. Roddy Ramos does inks. Pete Pantanzas does colors. Travis Lanham does letters. Scott Collins did the gruesome cover. Elizabeth V. Gerline is assistant editor. And Mike, not Mark, Carlin is the editor. This is a continuation of the Diary of Buddy Blank. And it tells about him and Una leaving Cadmus. All right. The superheroes were busy trying to save people. You know, they were just trying to get from point A to point B, and they kept running into what did he call them? Men with features, temperament, and the bestial intelligence of rats. And, you know, they're fighting past them because Una learned to fight from Karate Kid, all right? You know, the dead boy who brought this plague to our Earth. Now, remember, I'm still thinking this is on our planet. Well, you know what I mean when I say our planet, so shut up. All right, and I'm just like, wow, things are getting kind of raw. How are they going to explain this one over in, I don't know, Green Lantern, Black Canary? No. Whatever. As they're getting past these humans, they don't notice the little rat men who are following them. Okay? Like I said, the heroes were trying to save everybody. The army's trying to save the National Guard. Nobody's in charge. People are just running around. Heroes are, like I said, saving as many people as they can until they start to fall prey. They actually show Superman with the like face of like a wolf or something. They show the Teen Titans where Wonder Girl is fighting him, and then everybody's fighting each other. So the heroes are now starting to fight each other, right? It's just bad. This is like really, really bad. I mean, everything is just like really, really going to hell, you know? Buddy and Una make it to his daughter's apartment building where they get in there. He's talking about his daughter's apartment door being open. I thought of her first steps, her college graduation, pushing my grandson on the swings, teaching him how to swing a golf club. And everything was quiet. And he called him, and his voice, just a croak whisper. And then in the kitchen, a cupboard opened, and there's the little boy. Tears are running down Buddy's face, and he's hugging his grandson. And little boy starts to cry, and he said that his mother had become infected and tried to kill him. And Una just wanted to make sure she wasn't still around. He said, where is he? I don't know. I've been hiding for hours. Before he could explain to the little boy, he didn't know what was going on. They're attacked by the grandson's dog, who's carrying a carving knife. I mean, it's kind of cool looking. Una just stepped in and beat him. Now, of course, the kid is heartbroken because it was a little puppy when he got him, right? It's like how I would feel if all of a sudden Lola stood up and decided she wanted to start boxing me. No, if my other dog, Isabella, decided. Because, you see, actually, I should have said that one funny first, because that would have been funnier because, you know, Izzy is a boxer. So, oh, well, ruin that joke. Anyway, they escaped the dog, and then eventually, you know, Una's like, look, we got to get whatever we can and get out of here. The little rats are coming up the steps. I hate rats. I hate filthy, disgusting-ass things. Ugh. But they attack Una, and they're on her, and she, you know, she's trying to fight them off, but they're just gnawing at her and biting her, and it's, oh, my God, is it disgusting. And Jim Starlin has, like, the same rat face. It just looks like biting and fighting, and they're going up to the roof because that's the only option, and she's fighting, and the rats are on her, and they're ripping her apart, and when they, Buddy, and, you know, she's keeping them off of Buddy and the boy, and, you know, and all he's doing is thinking, you know, he's feeling selfish, but all he can do is get up to the roof, and, you know, saying things couldn't get any worse, but things get worse. He gets up there, and there's his daughter, the boy's mother, and she's ready to kill, right? And she is attacking her father, and he thought to myself, I'm going to have to kill my own daughter if I can. And as she's about to get him, and her hands are like turning into rat hands, and she's got blood all over her, and she, oh my God, rats everywhere. Una comes and saves the day and just knocks her off of him, saves him, and she's still got rats chewing on her. And then the daughter is grabbing Una while they're fighting, and the little rats are everywhere. And then she throws him her flight ring, says it's mentally controlled, you know? And then as she's fighting, she's telling him, you got to save yourself. He says, you know, it was probably Una's, but I would like to think it was my daughter's, you know. And then the big bodies, because, you know, the big rat woman was getting eaten by the little rats. And they just, they stopped moving, and the little ones just kept eating and eating. Oh, disgusting. So he puts the ring on his finger. He puts his grandson's face to his hip so he couldn't see. And then he takes off flying. And this was a really good shot of Buddy with the flight ring. He's holding the boy, and he's crying, and they're flying away. And you just see the roof of the building, and all you see is a bunch of damn rats and, like, one leg sticking out of the pile. Ugh. So, Buddy and the little boy go to a government installation that was left alone and forgotten. The Command D bunker. Yeah. He said, I only got dustier since I worked here on the Brother Eye project before the JLA shut it down. So, on this Earth, there was a Brother Eye. It got shut down, but it had its own generator. So he started up Brother Eye, which was still in orbit. You know, he rebooted its surveillance systems and just started watching everything. He was watching the end of the world because, of course, the few remaining uninfected politicians in India and Pakistan started accusing each other of starting the virus, and so they just started shooting off nuclear bombs. And then Washington, Moscow, Tehran, Everybody just said, screw this. We taking everybody with us. So I started blowing everything else, but the Mordococcus virus was smarter than everybody and just stuck around. You know? Brother I allowed him to look back in the Cadmus labs, and he saw the heroes who stayed alive, who, of course, were the heroes who weren't from that planet. And they realized that they had to leave. There was no reason to stay there. And Buddy was said, you know, I was going to contact him, but then, you know, what the point? What's the point? You know, he'd been out there. He'd seen through Brother I what they had to offer. So Jimmy boom-tubed them away, and it knocked out the surveillance cams, and he was alone. He said, wherever they went, I hope they're safe. He said, I kept my grandson safe. That's all that matters to me. It's just the two of us, but that's okay. The monsters can only touch him in his dreams and in mine. I find myself in the armory a lot, generally at night, familiarizing myself with the weapons just in case the bunker's defenses ever fail. The world outside ended, not with a bang or a whimper, but with the snarl made by throats never intended to make such noises. Now the planet begins its long nuclear hibernation. I won't live to see it wake, but I'll make damn sure nothing hurts the boy before I go. It will be a terrible, cruel thing to abandon him to a world that will be so different from the one he knew. I can only hope that one day he'll forgive me for making him the last boy on Earth, and then it ends with just a picture of Brother I ahead over the planet. And it's like, oh, damn! Easily my favorite issue. This whole part. Now, as I'm reading this, I'm up here thinking to myself, okay, that's the great disaster. This is Commandy. Okay, because remember, Commandy. This is Commandy, the last boy on Earth, right? How come I'm not reading this in any other issue, in any other DC comic book? What the hell? And then I got issue number 7. I realized, oh, okay, so they're on another planet. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, flat out, two favorite issues of this, of Countdown. Now, for non-long-term fans, this probably didn't mean much. It's probably just, you know, one great big, well, yeah, just one great big cool-ass story, okay? But for a long-time fan like me, it answered all kind of questions about Commandy and his grandfather, how he ended up the last boy on Earth, and about all the animal men, right? It answered what was the great disaster. Okay, that was one question that, you know, we heard about the great disaster, but what happened? You know, how did it get there? About Brother Ein Omac. I mean, it's like, now I want to go back and I want to read a bunch of those old Commandy books. Now I want to go back and I want to read Omac. And I don't know if they're going to... I didn't really say much about Hercules Unbound. But, I want to read this stuff now. You know, DC may have like kind of screwed themselves because, they pissed me off with their modern stuff. But it's really made me want to go back and read the older stuff. And I'll tell you right now, they could have made this a 12-issue miniseries, monthly thing, telling the exact same story. You know, you start off with Karate Kid, and you just focus on him. You can get rid of all the rest of the storylines. Just focus on him for a year. You end this right here. Boom. There you go. It could have been a 12-issue miniseries instead of a 52-weekly miniseries, okay? And I hate to say this, but up until this point, Countdown was a big, huge disappointment. These last two issues kind of showed a purpose to it, at least for this one storyline. The rest of it's just still makes no sense to me. There's stuff that's coming up that makes no sense to me. But I'm going to stop right here. I'm going to stop on a high note. Yeah, the great disaster, the destruction of the earth and everything on it. That's a high note. No, but it's a high note because to me, creatively, this is where it peaked. You know, this, if this wasn't the countdown to the final crisis, they could have made this countdown to the great disaster. Like I said, 12 issue monthly miniseries, but since they did this, they miscalculated. This is where it should have ended, right here. Maybe one last issue to say, okay, you know, and now we're going to have another imprint, you know, or they're going to bring back the stories of Commandy or whatever. But to me, this is it. This is the top. Anything after this is just gravy. All right, now will it be gravy on ice cream or gravy on mashed potatoes? Won't know till next issue, till next show. Hopefully I can get Mike back, but if not, I will be back maybe this week with the end of Countdown of Final Crisis. And I don't know yet, but I think I might include DC Universe Zero on the next show. But the next show will be issues 4, 3, 2, 1 at the very least. Anyway, thank you. If you have any comments, please send them to feedback@comicbooknoise.com. And if you get a chance, go to geekbrunchpodcast.com and check out Geek Brunch. Go to comicbooknoise.com, check out Comic Book Noise, and take it easy. I love this Comic Book